Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, a for real V-neck this time, my good buddy, producer extraordinaire, jet setter, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
Great, man. As I told you during the pre-show, busy, busy week. Got home. I crashed so hard sleeping, and I'm just fully recharged. Like, it was like probably like the second best sleep I've ever had in my life.
Okay, awesome. The Odin sleep, yeah. As it were?
The Odin sleep, yes.
So just so we're clear, and I want to make this abundantly clear, when we go through these previews, Cameron, you are not hallucinating. A bunch of these cards are this powerful. This is not some kind of weird, fever dream. This is actually happening, okay? So we'll just get that out of the way. But just to break it down, you did not get to play this week, right?
I didn't, no. I was out of state all week, and so I've looked at some spoilers. Like, that's like my magic this week, so I feel really bad, but just how it works.
Okay, so I did not play in a tournament this week due to my daughter had a volleyball tournament, kind of grown-up life stuff. But I do want, in this section, talk a little bit. Like, basically, Cameron, I want you to imagine that you're Fraser Crane, and I'm calling in to you with an issue that may or may not be that severe. It started last week when I watched some of the Legacy Open. Okay? I watched Hexmage Depths versus Mono Red. Okay? And I kind of started getting this feeling in my stomach that maybe I don't like Legacy as much as I used to.
I'm hanging up. All right. But let's hear it.
And then I started to think about this in regards to all non-rotating formats. And I think the real conclusion is, in the past year, I've just become a standard player. I think that's just what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
But between the Legacy matches I watched and then the Modern matches, which honestly have gotten a lot better. They've gotten a lot better. But I feel like there's a lot of non-Magic happening. Like, we always use the expression ships passing in the night. Hyperlinear decks, non-interactive decks.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is just like the bizarrest pet peeve. I'm really annoyed that everything needs to be Snowlands now. And it doesn't make logical sense. Like, it's not, the game is, don't overdo this. I'm not saying, Magic is dead. But it's just like, now it's correct to always run Snowlands. That sucks. And like, Modern, I think, has gotten a little bit better, but I watched a lot of non-matches in Legacy, right? And maybe that's just where the format is, but I also have this sneaking suspicion based upon Throne of Eldraine cards that Modern is also going to head into this really unhealthy place too, right? Like, we're just constantly fighting that tide. And again, maybe I'm overdoing it. You know, my Legacy cards aren't going anywhere. I'm still going to be playing. Looks like I'm going to be switching to Mentor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make me feel better about this, Cameron.
I
just took
say
a slow therapist sip from his coffee right there. That was nice.
I will say that I'm not going to disagree with you that things are different. I don't know if it's, like, for Legacy, if things just need to settle still. I mean, yeah, Snowlands being introduced a lot. I've seen that as well. It seems like it's correct to play a 5-color Ren and 6 deck because, you know, it's that good of a card that you should be playing it in almost everything. And that's something I don't like. When there's like one card that is just so clearly powerful that you just have to be putting it in your deck, that I feel like you don't get the separation that you might in, like, I think a healthier sort of format. I always go back to that standard when Jace Vryn's Prodigy was in it. And it was, are you playing a Jace Vryn's Prodigy deck? You know, because it was like 4-color good stuff. And like, to me, it pointed towards, like, I guess an unhealthy format. It pointed to like just this one core card that's warping the format where you just, it's wrong to not be playing it, right? And for me, I feel like Ren and Six is kind of there. And, like, I'm not saying that it needs to be banned, but, like, it does seem like if you are playing any sort of red that you should be splashing green now, because it's just that good of a card. So yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, like, I don't think I would say I'm like as negative. I've played against Ren and Six a lot in Legacy now, and I enjoy playing against the card. There's ways to deal with it. Like, Hydro Blast has become my new favorite card, right? Mm. But I don't know. I don't know what to say.
So just to clarify my actual concerns, is I feel like the era of hyper interactive Magic, like, is mm-hmm. gone, and we're steadily, because what I feel like Ren and Six does is it says, hey, if you are a mid-range to control deck, this is your engine all in one, right? This is, mm-hmm. you know, it can clean up threats, certain threats, a lot of certain threats. It yeah. can also be your mana engine. It can also be your advantage engine, card advantage engine. And that you should be, it's foolish to not play Ren and Six, or you're playing Bomberman, Storm, Mono Red Prison, something that can basically ignore Ren and Six. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in some cases, like, I think one of the events in the last few weeks had like six or seven Delver decks in the top eight. And I don't know how many of them were Ren and Six decks. But in the case of Blue Red Delver, the idea is, of course, that you just outvalue and outpace early on Ren and Six, right? Mm-hmm. So, but if, again, to just put a wrapper on this whole thing, Legacy, my concern is essentially Ren and Six. Like, if you take yeah. an honest-to-goodness look at it, you can call them Loam decks, you can call them Depths decks, you know, Rug, four-color control, whatever. These all have one card in common, and it's the best thing going, and it makes the format not great. I think it's worse than Deathrite Shaman.
Mm.
Because Deathrite Shaman had more answers built in. Right?
Yeah.
And Deathrite Shaman, I feel like, was a safety valve against other things, right? Like, for all the problems with Deathrite Shaman, it could, in fact, shrink a Tarmogoyf. It could, in fact, you know, the thing that was obnoxious is when you were in Deathrite Shaman mirrors or whatever. Mm-hmm. Modern, less so. Again, I'm still considering buying/trading into Urza. I'm just going to be working through Death Shadow for the time being. But the Urza decks, it's looking like it might be a problem here, Cameron.
Yeah, you might be wise to not buy those Moxen anytime soon, I guess, right?
Yeah, and did you see that we didn't talk about it, I don't think. We're not going to talk about this week. The Artifact Merfolk, that's like a Stoneforge Mystic for artifacts. It's a blue Merfolk.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
let's just not. So I'm going to be playing Standard for at least a little bit longer, but I just need to find a reason to believe. And probably what it's going to take is me playing Death Shadow, Grixis Death Shadow, at an event, having a really good time with it, and going, okay, you know, let my mind stop racing and stop worrying about this. But
sure.
I would not be surprised if within 3 weeks to a month, I'm saying maybe it's time for Ren and Six to be shown the door in Legacy. Mm.
We'll see. We'll see.
Everybody from your shop is going to be so irritated that I'm even saying this, right? But
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you yet. I don't know. I'm like right on the fence.
Okay. Well, hey, Cameron, we've got some actually bazonkers cards to talk about.
Yeah,
so
man.
Let's get out of this segment and just go hard on Throne of Eldraine. So, Cameron, I'm trying to remember a spoiler segment where I thought every single card was a standard all-star to multi-format all-star. That is today.
Mm. Yeah.
We have the full Throne of Eldraine spoilers. We've almost certainly missed cards.
For sure.
But these are ones that we have not talked about that I don't even know, man. So why don't you just start us off with good old Brazen Borrower?
Yeah, man. How do you feel about, like, well, we'll just talk about it. Brazen Borrower, it is a creature that costs 3/1, the cost of one colorless and a blue-blue. Then it has the adventure mechanic, instant, petty theft of a one and a blue, return target non-land permanent, and opponent controls to its owner's hand, and then it has flash flying. Brazen Borrower can block only creatures with flying. So we got a little bit of a Vendilion click. We've got a little bit of, you know, Cryptic Command, like one part Cryptic Command. And overall, a really, really good just tempo card, man. Like, I really love this card. Like, I feel like putting it in some sort of, like, blue-based tempo deck, whether that's, you know, and it, swapping this out for Vendilion Click, I mean, that could work in some cases. I mean, Vendilion Click is still super good as far as, like, very specific corner case instances. But, like, man, being able to just bounce Meddling Mage, cast this, and, I mean, like, we're talking, like, a huge advantage where all of a sudden now I can cast my Path to Exile or something along those lines. So, this is a great card. I mean, totally down for this. It's definitely going to be standard role player, and I would totally sub this in like Modern or Legacy.
So listen to the way we're talking about this card. I mean, Vendilion Click is one of the, I mean, certainly one of the top five blue creatures ever printed.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Maybe third best Snapcaster, Delver. Anybody? I mean, it's got to be Vendilion Click or Morphling if you're feeling old school. So, shout out to Serendip Ifrit. He's my boy, but time has passed him by. Anyway, I don't want Serendip Ifrit to text me and say, hey, man, where's the respect?
Hey, yeah, where's the love? Yeah.
But, dude, just think of it this way. First of all, Vendilion Click is not a two-for-one, right? I understand what Narset it is, but like Vendilion Click gives you better versatility because you can click yourself. You cannot bounce your own thing with this because then this card would be even more outrageous than it currently is. But the fact that it's got card advantage built in, like there are going to be times where you're like, bounce your creature on turn five, you bounce whatever they play, flash this thing, attack their planeswalker. Like that's going to be a really common line. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The limiting factor on this guy is Teferi. That's it. That is it. And I think it was Jerry Thompson on his podcast said, the can block only creatures with flying. That's not so much a downside as it is a reminder text that there's no way you should ever block with this creature anyway. Right? He's meant to get him, right? And an absurd amount of the time, this creature is going to attack planeswalkers. He is going to be a blue deck's way to keep down planeswalkers. You're going to bounce one and attack the other. You're going to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And bouncing problematic permanents, which in this set, there are plenty. There are these ridiculous artifacts.
Yeah.
Like, there are things that you're going to want to bounce. You're going to bounce the two mana enchantment for mono red, on and on and on. The utility. Now, why this is not legendary is crazy to me, too. First of all, it's a mythic. And there is a scenario in which this is a four of in every tournament blue deck.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it's a mythic, would it have killed you to call him, you know, Carl, Legendary
Brazen,
Fairy?
The
yeah.
Borrower.
Yeah. Something. So at least there's like one limiting kind of thing on it. I mean, it is the kind of card I like to be good, but it's just so patently obvious how good it is. The metagame would have to line up very anti-blue for this not to see just a ridiculous amount of play.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be the card that is going to cause people to fly into a rage.
Yeah.
They're going to, I'd like to attack, bounce it, pay three, block your other guy. Like, that's going to happen all
good.
The time. Yeah, that's going to happen all the time.
Man, like, this is actually getting me excited. Is this, like, the card that you need in fairies? Could this be a card that actually makes fairies playable again? I mean, probably not, but like I definitely want to try. Like it's so powerful, and like this with Spellstarter, I mean, like there's so many like tempo advantages that you can get. Dang, it's good. Love it.
And this is like an effect that fairies needs, right? Because the biggest problem with fairies is removing things once they're on the board, right? You can counter stuff. That's not the problem.
Yeah.
It's when they get something underneath you. All right, Cameron. Well, hey, how about a better adventure card for control? Murderous Rider. One black for a zombie knight. He's got lifelink, and when he dies, put it on the bottom of their library.
Great.
just in case you're wondering, because this had come up on a different podcast I listened to, it is not a replacement effect. So die effects still happen. So if you still have like Midnight Reaper or any of that stuff, that still occurs, which is really unusual for this style of card. But then it's got an adventure. One black, black for an instant. It's an instant, Cameron. Destroy target creature or planeswalker, you lose 2 life. So you're always playing this card. Any black deck, right?
Yeah.
When are you not playing this card?
I mean, like, it's Hero's Downfall, right? I mean, with, like, a slight disadvantage. But guess what? You're casting a 2-3 body where you're just... You're totally... absolutely fine playing this card in any black-based deck. Any control. It doesn't matter. You're playing this card.
So what I think, though, is it's more of a control card. Let me clarify this. Because let's say there's an Aristocrats deck, black-red aggro, whatever. You're going to play this card. Like, I just can't imagine any kind of black midrange specifically up. Like, if there's a green-black deck, you are playing this card. Like, that's not... But with black-green and, like, Esper control specifically, your ability to play this from exile after you wrath or after you've been wrathed is huge. Huge. Like, you're going to play this... If you're playing Esper control, you're going to cast this guy in, like, turn 8. You're going to... From exile. You're going to remove stuff... Okay, I've got 2 life-linking riders now. The end, right? This is this could be so good. This could end up being a secondary win con in control.
That's crazy.
And the lifelink plays with Command of the Dreadhorde, plays with Bolas's Citadel. All of it. So, like, the only scenario in which this doesn't see, like, an absurd amount of play is Mono Red's the best deck in Standard. And even then,
don't put lifelink back. I mean, like, that's a thing, right?
Yeah. So, like, if you're playing, you might 4-mana Chandra or 3-mana Chandra, you know, take 2 to hit it. And then the next turn you play the lifelinker. That might be enough. I would suspect not. But
yeah,
it's not crazy that that ends up being the case. This is a really, it's a really good card, Cameron. All right, here. How about the next one? Let's just keep going.
Yeah, this is the one where I was like, what? Just because, you know, green card draw isn't good enough. Let's put Once Upon a Time in there. Once Upon a Time cost 1 and a green for an instant. If this is the first spell you've cast this game, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. What? And then, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature or land from among them. Put it into your hand. Put the rest in the bottom of your library in any random order. Dude, what are they thinking? I read this, and I was thinking, wait, it's an instant? So, sure, I'll be on the draw. That's fine. I don't care. I mean, like, what? I mean... Oh my gosh, you can play this on turn 1 on your opponents. I mean, like, it's insane. This card is insane.
Right.
Like, yeah, incredible.
You can also, you know, just wait till you draw. See what you need. I mean, it's probably going to be correct to draw your card first. You can, like, there's all kinds of weird tricks. So, first of all, modern applications all aside, Legacy and Vintage, this is just asking for trouble.
Oh my gosh. Another free spell.
Yeah. Someone has almost assuredly broken it already. I don't know how good it is in the Allosaurus Rider deck, the Neoform deck.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But I think Frank Karsten, somebody on Channel Fireball did this thing that, like, just straight up, if you play 4 of these, you're in a green deck, you can play 2 less lands. Period. End of story. Like, it is just mathematically the same. But, like, other weird things, like, if it's Legacy and it's turn your opponent's turn 1, you need to cast this on their upkeep so they don't play an island for days. Like, so, like, there's a literal no defense for this being the first spell, unless they want to force it, which seems terrible.
That's great card advantage there.
But this is one of those things when I was kind of filled with anxiety about older formats. It's this card, man. Like, what is happening? It also, you know, we were higher on Questing Beast than I think a lot of other shows review things. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the kind of thing that sets up a card like Questing Beast. Because on paper, it's not that impressive, guys. It's not that impressive, but this card will almost always find your one mana Gilded Goose, right? Or your proper land, or whatever. And all that is, all a green-red aggro deck is, it's just a bro fest of dudes, right? That hits you harder than you hit back. And this card accelerates that to an alarming degree. So standard, all-star, modern, and legacy just asking to be broken or banned.
Yeah.
We keep doing this with free spells, guys.
Yeah. What are you thinking?
I think at Wizards, they must have like a pool. Who can design a free mana spell that will not, you know, somehow be busted, right?
Yeah.
But, why is this not a sorcery? I don't understand.
That's what I couldn't believe. I was like, okay, that's not awful. I mean, you play this on your... But instant? Like, I mean, we're talking... It's insane. Insane.
You and I, like, it's just hard to review this card because you just end up being speechless.
Yeah.
It's impossible for me to imagine a scenario where green is in your deck and you're not 100% playing four of these. What is the downside? And by the way, if you cast this on turn 7, still not bad. Still not bad. Still going to find you some stuff.
Also, like, let's say London Mulligan is still a thing. I mean, like, oh my gosh. Like, sure, I'll put 2 on the bottom. Now I'll be able to dig even 5 for free. It's there's no... yes, there's disadvantage built into it. But, I mean, like, you're digging 5 cards for free.
Yeah.
In Modern. And Ponder doesn't exist. Like, I mean, think about that.
So on a modern level, what's going to be interesting, does Jund or something like that's not nearly as intrusive in our minds? Like, because to me, I think Tron or, you know, something.
Oh, yeah.
Neoform.
All the busted things, right?
All the busted things. But it's like, it might just be correct for Jund to just have 4 of these because why not?
Mm-hmm.
And
it finds you an answer or it finds you part of your engine, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And as a top deck, when you're stalled out, perfectly acceptable. There's never the downside is it's 2 mana then, but like the times that you're hitting it for nothing matter so much more. Like, do you play this in humans? I don't know. It's so weird. Like, I don't know what they were thinking. Okay. I feel like that was 5 minutes of us going, oh my. All right, so Cameron, there's cards that when I look at, I get a feeling of, oh no, I guess. Or I should say, I can't believe they're doing this. With this set, it wasn't Once Upon a Time. It was Mystic Sanctuary. What I call the Snapcaster Shakes. The first time I remember where I was sitting when I read Snapcaster, and I was like, what? Right?
Yeah.
This card is an island. and that adds blue mana to your mana pool. If it enters the battlefield, it'll enter the battlefield tapped unless you control 3 or more other islands. So it has to be your fourth land, okay? When Mystic Sanctuary enters the battlefield untapped, you may put target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard on top of your library. What? So, this is a fetchable rebuy on an instant or sorcery that's in your yard. So, Miracles has really been on the decline.
Yeah. How do 12 Wraths sound?
Yeah, and I mean, I got to be honest with you. I don't know how many times it's just going to be Brainstorm, and boy, that's going to be enough. But this might make the other Miracles more playable in Miracles. I don't even know.
That's true. Yeah.
It also makes Terminus like a lot better in Modern. You know, like they're all
it makes Terminus actually playable, like an actual utilization. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're playing Opt, so like any miracle with in modern Opt and Legacy Brainstorm in your hand, it becomes you get it, right? It just mm-hmm. happens. I will say in Legacy specifically, hitting four islands is a joke. Like that's not a problem for that deck at all. No. And they've been going away from back to basics anyway because of our friend of the aforementioned Renin 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, I get it. There might not be something worth getting in your graveyard. But the cost, the opportunity cost is so crazy low. Like,
yeah,
you're going to play four of these. They're not legendary. Why not? You just fetch them. If you're worried about one coming into play, tap that you don't want. You can just fetch for it at instep. But, like, again, just buying, rebuying things like Swords of Plowshares, Brainstorm. You can also do random mm-hmm. things like have a fetch land out. They say, I'm going to scavenging ooze your Swords to Plowshares. Fetch land. Put it back on top. Negs the whole thing. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it makes things like Thoughtseize where, like, that turn one play just doesn't matter anymore. I Thoughtseize to get rid of, I don't know, Council's Judgment. And doesn't matter. Turn four, they buy that back, and now they're able to, you know, still get rid of Liliana or like whatever your threat is, right? So, man, this is a good card.
Yeah, I mean, so downsides, it could get choked.
Ooh,
right, like
that's a thing, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and. You know, there's also blink effects. Like, I mean, you could get into this weird thing where you're this becomes abusable. But just, I mean, I think in standard you're going to play it some number of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But in older formats, the fact that this is fetchable is just frightening.
Yeah.
All right, Cameron, our last incredibly powerful and ridiculous card that will almost certainly be a four of in all these decks. Go ahead.
Fabled Passage. It's a land. Tap and sacrifice Fabled Passage. Search your library for a basic land card. Put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. Then, if you control four or more lands, untap that land. Yeah, why aren't you playing this? This is a fetchable... I mean, like, it's another prismatic vista, right? I mean, like, in standard, this is great. I mean, like, one of the things I say... was kind of limiting with like the last standard was just fetchable lands. Like, you know, like I was just trying to think of something like Scapeshift, which I guess doesn't exist anymore, right? But like, let's say Historic or something like this. This is a sort of engine that you're going to want that allows you to start generating things. Like, so I feel like this is totally playable in standard. Like, I mean, if we're playing... Miracles, man. Like, Fabled Passage seems to just fit right in there with something like Prismatic Vista, and the upside is you don't pay a life. Like, I mean, like, which, I mean, may play a factor in the late game or something like that. So, I don't know. It's a really good card. I mean, like, the downside is like, you're searching for a basic. I mean, but... that's also an upside.
Yeah, I'm less convinced about older formats. Like, if you're in the market for a fifth Prismatic Vista, then, like, I think this is
just
where
you... just play Flooded Strand, right?
Yeah. That being said, like, this is the most busted... because, like, again, outside of the weird standard of Battle for Zendikar, Fetchlands and Standard have not been very good.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it looks like we're headed in a direction where they will be quite good this next go round, if they theoretically reprint them, right? But like, Fabled Passage, completely holds together Esper Control. Like, I honestly mm-hmm. think Esper Control or a Field of the Dead deck that is 3 to 5 colors is 100% unplayable without this card.
Because mm-hmm.
otherwise, you're playing like Gates. There are no dual lands in Throne of Eldraine. So you have to like really stitch things together. We have that weird unbalanced mana base thing where we have the scry lands from the core set that are enemy colored. Theoretically, we'll get the allied side when we go back to Theros. But like, this is better than all that.
Mm-hmm. Also, you can fetch for your Mystic Sanctuary. Fun fact.
Is that, does that actually work?
Right? Basic land. Maybe not. No. Basic land. It's no, no. Sorry. I was thinking fetch island, but you're right.
Yeah. Cameron, don't scare me like that,
woo!
Man.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, like I actually had to, because I almost never pre-order cards, but it's like, I'm going to have four of these. Like, I just can't imagine a scenario where I don't 1,000, and clearly it's sold out on Star City for a reason. People mm-hmm. believe they need four of them as well. So, yikes. It's Terramorphic Expanse / Evolving Wilds / Prismatic Vista on a different scale. And on mm-hmm. on a scale that makes it incredibly powerful for Standard. So, yeah. All right, Cameron.
And this is honestly, for me, like in Historic, this is the beginning of where Historic is going to be heading, I guess, right? Because like, if Scapeshift is a thing, which it will be in Historic, mm-hmm. you're playing Fabled Passage, and it is like a great, yeah, role player in that deck.
Oh, and dude, I do want to emphasize, like, Land of the Dead, that whole deck, like, Scapeshift is like the thing that's rotating. There, and like one of the mana spells, but there's a replacement for that in Throne of Eldraine. You are going to see a version of that deck. I don't mm-hmm. think it's going to be nearly as good. But I think people are kind of prematurely calling that one dead. You know, mm-hmm. it's just not Scapeshift where it's like, oh, I make 30 zombies.
Sure.
It's going to be more like four or five at a time, you know? Oh, man. All right, Cameron. We're going to get out of the segment, talk a little bit of the thing you've listed here as a film, right? Not a TV show?
Yes, it is.
okay, yeah, we're going to talk movies, video games, all that stuff. We'll be right back. All right, Cameron, so we're back. We're talking some stuff we've done this week. I want to hear from you about Ad Astra, because I don't know, like, actual nothing. I have no idea what this is.
Okay, so I would recommend, first and foremost, you go and watch the trailer. It is a film that stars Brad Pitt, and it's a space opera-type movie, right? It's like this, on a surface, there are these pulses coming from like Neptune that are like disrupting like the big energy fields that are disrupting the power grid, causing mass chaos. It takes place at an unknown point in the future, but we've colonized Mars, we've colonized the moon. And it's him just going out to Neptune to figure this, what's happening in this mystery. And it deals with like a lot of other things, with like just him personally and like dealing with his father and like the legacy of his father and whatnot. So it's like really kind of like a simple story on the baseline, but it's also like an incredibly like just beautiful movie and well written. I really like the characterization of Brad Pitt in this. It was really good. I think the best looking movie I've seen all year is, I mean, like we're talking like giant vistas of the moon, giant vistas of like spaceship dotted crossing like Jupiter and Neptune. It's just like, for me, eye candy in the best sense. Right.
Sounds awesome.
So yeah. It's really, really good. It's a little slow. It's a little ponderous, you know, but like, I feel like this is a sort of movie like 2001 or Blade Runner, where it encourages multiple viewings. You know, like this visually, it's great. It just has really good elements. Like, I really, really dug this movie. I definitely want to go see it again. And I recommend seeing, like, if you're going to go see this movie, you're interested, see it in the big screen, on the biggest screen you possibly can, because like some of those vista shots are just, I was just melting in my seat. They were so good.
Who directed this movie?
So James Gray, he is kind of like this unknown director that's like of the crop of people like P.T. Anderson and, you know, Tarantino to a lesser extent, where like early 90s had like a kind of a cult hit that was did really, really well in like, you know, the Sundance Film Festival circuit. He is like a celebrity in in Europe. Like, he's hugely popular in Europe for, like, cinephiles and whatnot. Yeah, so he did, like, Lost City of Z, which came out about 2 or 3 years ago. Another kind of slow-boiling movie, visually just gorgeous, like, another, like, just beautiful movie. So, and he's, like, the actor's director, right? Like, I mean, he really lets actors chew on the scenery and do their thing. So it was weird because, like, this kind of had, like, a slow release. It was, like, you know, kind of an indie film, but with, like, a huge Hollywood blockbuster star. But yeah, man, I would highly recommend it. It's Ad Astra. Super good.
I hate whenever we have these conversations, because even when you're like, dude, you've got to go see this, it's like, well, I'll see it in 6 months on my TV.
Yeah, downstairs. I know. Yeah, it'll be on HBO.
Like, so. It's just not within my theoretical reach. I do want to ask you, have you gotten into anything with Apple Arcade, being the Apple person you are?
No, I have not even, like, even opened the app, because we have an Apple TV, of course, and I haven't even checked it out yet. So I need to, just especially to see what I might be getting into with something like Google Stadia here in the future. So I'm curious about it.
Well, I've been surprised by this, but the reviews have been earth-shatteringly positive. Like, really positive. And I guess you can use your PlayStation or Xbox controller on it.
You can. Yeah.
And so the big difference, though, Cameron, is versus something like Stadia, the games do download to your device. And so basically you're going to experience the cloud save transferring, so you can pick up progress, but theoretically you won't have any of the lag that you would have with Stadia. Which, you know, again, I haven't touched a Stadia, so I don't know what to expect there.
Sure.
You read one positive thing and one negative thing about that, and you're just like,
I don't know what to think.
Yeah, I don't know what to think. But yeah, so I wanted to throw that out there, that I think both Polygon and Kotaku wrote positive reviews, and Polygon's not in the habit of writing positive reviews about anything. So
I was going to say, yeah.
They just spoil movies in their headlines. Anyway, inside joke,
oh,
sorry.
Oh, dude, yeah.
anyway, so I just wanted to bring this up really quickly, is I've been, for like a matter of 10 hours or something, I've had a Switch Lite. I picked up, and so when I went to the GameStop, the lady goes, "You do not want a Switch Lite." And I said, "Why?" She goes, "Do you want to play with anyone else?" I said, "No." She goes, "Do you want to
I have no friends.
Do you want to play on a TV?" "No." "Do you want your kids to use the Joy-Cons?" "No." Like, it was just like, let me tell you something about being over 30 and being a gamer, lady.
Yeah, like, here's my checklist of
I want a solitary experience. Like, literally buying it. So it is slightly smaller. I think it's like 0.7 inches smaller of a screen. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the Joy-Cons don't break off and that it's all one kind of unit, it feels better in your hands. I don't, like, this is going to sound like the craziest thing ever. I feel like the original Switch is too wide.
I will totally agree with that. Yeah.
And so I wanted one. I was never playing my Switch on the TV. I didn't announce the Lite. I wanted to put one in my hands before I made the decision. But honestly, the fact that there's a D-pad on the dang thing really changed a lot for me. Plus, if I'm being honest, I was super wrong about Nintendo's software lineup this year. I thought that they were not bringing enough, and little did I know that they would have a Nintendo Direct every month where they're like, oh, hey.
Yeah, making it rain games. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, the thing that kind of puts me off is how much it's just last-gen software that runs worse and is more expensive. So, like, I do have issues there still. But new Zelda came out, the $200 Switch came out. It's like, okay, time to pull the trigger on this. And overall, I've been really positive on it, and I played about 20 minutes, 30 minutes of Zelda. I will say I love the game. I love the art direction. There are definite frame rate problems. So
really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean,
okay.
And Nintendo usually crushes that. Usually there are no problems. I mean, with Breath of the Wild, I can, like, understand a little bit more, but this is, like, a top-down game. Like,
I was going to say, like, it's, like, Super Nintendo with a new skin, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then I did do the, you know, we complained last week about the Nintendo service, and so I was like, okay, I want to see what this is like. So I did the 7-day free trial and loaded on the Nintendo and Super Nintendo stuff. Fun fact about my wife, she is, like, hypersensitive to latency. She played Super Mario 3 for like 30 seconds. She's like, this is wrong. Right? And, you know, this is the thing that you kind of battle with emulating these old things. I will say this. When I jumped into it, I do like the presentation of it. The Super Nintendo lineup has the really high-end hits, Mario World, Link to the Past, Super Metroid. Mm-hmm. The level underneath that is not very good. And I don't know, like, what the thought process is there. But you'll notice when you get into it, the NES lineup is a little bit better. I'm probably going to ditch my free trial until summer, maybe never. I don't know. But I was not overwhelmed by that. And I think what they need to do is create a service. If you want me to pay, it needs to be more than just NES and Super Nintendo.
Agreed. Yeah.
I mean, what they had a bunch of different systems on the original Wii. Like, it was Genesis, Master System.
They did a ton of stuff, yeah. Neo Geo, right?
Yeah. Like, if you put all that together in one service, I'll be there with bells on. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. when it's the same, like we talked about this last week, when you're asking me to play Link to the Past again and again, I'm like, So, anyway, but the light itself, like, if you've never put your hands on it, Cameron, it's a sturdy piece of kit. Which
I'll have to check it out. I'm curious. Just, yeah, if that small difference in size actually makes an impact. I'm sure it does. So
yeah. All right. And then last thing I want to mention, Cameron, podcast, The Dream. It got sent to me by my sister. I've been listening to the first like four episodes. Pretty good recommend. It's about multi-level marketing schemes.
Okay.
And, of which my parents, when I was a kid were part of, you know, the whole like come to my house, have a party, sell things. And we're talking really in depth on those, and it is eye opening.
The Dream.
Yeah. I will tell you right now, you will not like the production of some of the things. It's a little bit slower and ponderous and not as consistent as something like This American Life, which what would be.
Sure.
But man, the research that they do is really special. They actually have somebody go into like be a spy and have them join a multi-level marketing scheme.
Wow. Okay.
And, like a makeup one. And it's super interesting. So anyway, Cameron, if someone would like to get a hold of you and talk to and see if you'd be willing to sell knives, where could they find you?
I want to actually start my own marketing scheme. This is brilliant. We can do that on Twitter at Cameron_McCoy.
So what do we do? So sorry, let's just brainstorm this real quick.
Yeah.
Magic multi-level marketing.
Oh my gosh. Just, I have sleeves I'm going to sell.
Yeah. The best sleeves. And they're just ultra pros.
Yeah.
But we charge double and we say, if you want to become a premium seller, you need to get six of your friends to sell to four of their friends.
Uh-huh.
And they're all paying us each $200 to become members, right? Dude,
this is brilliant.
This is brilliant.
Okay, next Patreon level thing. We're going to set this up.
I regret to inform you the spike feed is over.
Yeah, we've been arrested.
Yeah. All right, man. And I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is at Spike Feed MTG. We will check you guys next week.